The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you once again. Sorry for a little 24-hour delay. Phil and I are both a little busy on Sunday, and with no midweek game for Marquette this week, we figured we could kick it back a day. So sorry for the slight delay, but we're here now, and Phil and I are back in our bullshit and ready to talk basketball. How you doing, Phil?
Good. I mean, well, our plane landed in Denver, and we had to, like, get off, and they had to fix it, and then we showed up, and then, and of course, we resulted in just a bad loss because we were exhausted from all the travel. We know how that goes, right? Happened to Marquette, happened to us. Oh, wait.
Yeah,
oh, wait.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, the UCLA game, we're going to talk about that game. Didn't go exactly, well, I mean, I guess it did kind of go exactly as we kind of thought it would, but tough first half, but some positives to take away from it, I think. We'll get into those, and we'll talk about the win over K-State, which was a nice W, and we're also going to talk about, since we are basically not really the halfway point of the season, but a milestone mark of the season, I guess, for lack of a better term, is that we're done with non-conference and we're looking ahead to conference play. So after we kind of recap the games, the week that was, Phil and I are going to do kind of what we've learned so far on this young Marquette team. And I think we've learned a lot, and we'll see what there is still to come. But Phil, let's talk about this week. And, you know, going into the week, if we said it was going to be 1-1, I think we both would have taken it. I overall satisfied with the week, even though the UCLA game may have left a bit of a bitter taste in our mouths, just the rough start in that game. But overall, I can't complain about going on the road and getting a win in Manhattan and then losing to the number four team in the country.
Yeah, this is, I mean, quite frankly, this is what hope looks like, right? Like this is why Shawshank had an entire, you know, arc about hope is what kills you and, you know, hope is the best of things, right? Like, so this week, 1-1 is absolutely what we needed to do. And we did it. The window dressing might be a little different than we anticipated, but I'm not going to be mad about going on the road and beating a top 50 KenPom team and then turning around. And quite frankly, the synopsis is terrible first half, not bad second half, you know, against UCLA. And, you know, and I think we'll get more in depth in both of those games, but I don't think we can be mad about where we are after the non-conference season and after this week.
I certainly am not. As Marquette sits here at 8-3 on the season, I think if we went back to our preseason projections, I'm pretty sure I had them at 6-5, and I think you did too as well, Phil, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's correct.
So two games better than we both hoped, and you know, for what it's worth, you know, the early bracketology has Marquette right there in the mix on the good side of the bubble. I know Joe Lunardi put out one on Monday that had Marquette as an 11 seed in the tournament. Again, this is very early, but still, it's interesting to see what people who study this stuff think of Marquette at this point in the season. And so Marquette has, by getting eight non-conference wins and three losses, none of them bad losses, have themselves at least in a position, Phil, to play for a tournament berth. Are they going to get there? I don't know, but I'm at least open to that possibility much more than I was about 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can start to adjust our priors a little bit. Again, I think we were convinced that going into this season that, hey, we'd be lucky to be at 500. We still may end up there. But I think the floor is a little bit higher than we originally anticipated, and the ceiling is also potentially a little higher. That's not saying we're going to achieve the ceiling, but I think there is a better than reasonable chance that we can at least be in the tournament discussion. And if you think about it, especially with a relatively abbreviated non-conference schedule compared to years past, we banked a number of quality wins in non-conference, and we didn't end up with any bad losses, as far as we know, right? I mean, I don't know. UCLA could fall apart. St. Bonaventure could fall apart. You know, whatever.
I'd be shocked if any of them fell apart, as you're saying, to the point that they're like not tournament teams, especially UCLA. That's a Final Four quality team.
Right. Absolutely. So it's highly unlikely that we have any bad losses from the, you know, I doubt we have anything lower than a Q2 loss on the record. Which serves really well. So that, I mean, if you really break it down, and we haven't talked about the games in specifics, but I mean, there's an argument to be made. You don't have to do that much in Big East play. You have to finish at 500 or a little bit above to be in the tournament discussion. And I think that's what this week has secured for them, the ability to go a little over 500 and potentially get a bid.
Yeah. Absolutely, they put themselves in a great position, and going on the road and getting a win in Manhattan against Kansas State. Love what we saw from the team in that game. Won it with defense late, Oso with a clutch block at the end. That's kind of like the lasting image from that game. But you got a little bit from a lot of people. There wasn't really one guy who stood out offensively, I would say. I mean, Cam Jones and Justin Lewis were the two guys in double figures, but. You know, Cam Jones had that incredible three late in the game.
Yeah.
And like I said, they won that game. They just kind of were able to grind it out defensively and got the big stop at the end. I mean, that's the kind of tough win you love to see on the road, that, you know, in a game where, in a place, it's a hostile environment, to use the old cliche, but the Octagon of Doom has that name for a reason. It's a tough place to go, travel, and play and win, and they got it done. You know, when it comes down to it, you know, Kansas State may be a team like Marquette that is fighting for a bid, and to have a win over them is very encouraging. And I just love the fight that we saw from Marquette last week in that win in Manhattan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the last part that you said there is the most important, right? This is yet another game amongst the 12 we've played where, you know, it becomes a piece of proof that is, hey, this is who we are as a team, is the fight in the team, right? They got up at the end of the first half, and then, you know, at one point, I believe, looking at it, yeah, the largest lead, Kansas State, was up six, which in the Octagon of Doom, easy for me to say, is a pretty substantial lead. That might be 9 or 10 points somewhere else, right? Especially with Kansas State's defense. But they fought back and they didn't give up. We saw that in the Illinois game. We saw it in the West Virginia game, right? We've joked around about the get down by 12 and activate the cheat code to come back and win. You know, so that's who this team is. They're going to win with tenacious defense. They're going to get back into a game even if they get out of it, and they just really need some opportunistic offense, right? Like, the defense is certainly what powers this team, and at times that game against Kansas State was almost a literal rock fight. I mean, there were bricks galore. There were shots going off the side of backboards, tops of backboards, under the hoop, right? It's not pretty from a shooting perspective, but when the shots were needed, they hit them. And like you said, the Oso block was, I don't know about you, but I just about jumped through my ceiling.
Yeah, that was it. And you'll love to see it from Oso, a guy who we've bragged about in this podcast a couple times in the recent pods about how he seems to definitely be one of the young pieces that are going to be critical going forward. You know, he does have 3 years of eligibility left after this season, if he wants to use all three of them, and hopefully all three of them in Milwaukee, because I think he's only going to keep getting better. And I just love the progression that we've seen from him, even from the first week of this season. And you can just see the confidence, and you know, Shaka had confidence to have him in the game in that moment, and he made a play for him. And just love where he's coming along.
Yeah, and we've gotten an embarrassment of riches at the five, right? I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but the fact that we have both Quoth and Igodaro, who have somewhat different defensive styles, but are still both outstanding defensively and can contribute on the offensive end, Man, that is quite a luxury. You could never play them together, but my God, you wish you could.
Yeah, but basically you've got 10 fouls to work with between the two of them and for the over the course of 40 minutes. And odds are you're going to have at least one of them left at the end of the game, if not both, if you need to swap them in and out. But I think your point is that you're always going to have a guy in the middle that you're comfortable with
right
back there, offensively and defensively. So love that. Another thing that I would say is a positive from the week, really from both games, and it kind of started in the Kansas State game and carried into the UCLA game, is the awakening of Greg Elliott.
Yes. Welcome back, Mr. Elliott.
Yeah, I think you know his shot is coming around. I mean, he revived a lifeless Marquette team in that first half against UCLA. I mean, the game, unfortunately, was really never in doubt for UCLA, but at least Greg's shooting ability, and he hit 6 threes in the game, it at least gave Marquette some life and at least made the second half watchable. Whereas, you know, if the second half had continued the way the first half was, I probably would have turned the game off and said, look, enough is enough. I mean, I think score-wise, I mean, I guess technically Marquette did win the second half. But, you know, Greg at least injected some life, and it gives me some hope going forward that we're going to see more of that. Maybe, you know, we're not necessarily going to see him get 22 points and hit 6 threes every night, but an offensive spark from Greg is going to be critical, I think, for this offense if they're going to win tough Big East games.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we need another piece because, you know, Greg's offense coming around in that UCLA game was timely because, you know, we're starting, and we'll talk about it a little bit more during the, you know, what are we seeing over the full non-conference schedule discussion, but we're starting to see, I don't know if fate is right or maybe just hit a bump, but we're starting to see some of the guards, Daryl Morcel, Stevie Mitchell, et cetera, that have struggled on the offensive end of late. So to have Greg kind of wake up and be able to contribute that much admittedly a losing effort to UCLA was good to see, right? It gives Shaka more options. I think the one big thing I kind of want to point out or take away from the UCLA game is, again, defense was relevant. You know, Marquette held UCLA to the fewest points they've scored all season in a game, right? And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a moral victory, right? I think that shows that if the offense can do anything of consequence, like the defense is good enough to keep you in the game with, you know, various teams, right? I'm not saying that Marquette is the equivalent of UCLA, but the defense is good enough to let you hang with them.
Yeah, if Marquette's offense had even played above average by its own standard, especially from a three-point shooting percentage, the game was there for the taking based on the way the defense played. You know, take my money gimmick that we're doing this season, the goal for the UCLA game was for Marquette to hold UCLA below 50% effective field goal percentage. And it ended up being, shockingly, 43.2, which is great. You know, if you'd told us coming in that UCLA would have a 43% effective field goal percentage for the game, I would wonder, did we win?
Right. And by how much did we win, right?
Right. You know, that is a very acceptable, beyond acceptable performance for the defense against a team like UCLA. Now, UCLA got a bunch of offensive rebounds, got a lot of second chances. That kind of is why the margin what it was. And more than that, Marquette's shooting was abysmal. You know, Greg Elliott was great from 3, 6 of 9, but the rest of the team was 2 of 24 from 3. So overall, you're talking 8 of 33 from 3, a 24% from 3, which is below Marquette's already subpar season average.
Right.
So yeah, like I said, if they even shot slightly above their season average from 3, they might win that game. If they don't win, it comes down to the final possession or two. The game was right there. So, but to your point, Phil, the defense was good enough to win against a top five team, and that is certainly encouraging as we go into Big East play, where we will not see really anybody on UCLA's level. Maybe if you want to put Villanova there, but we saw what happened when Villanova and UCLA played earlier this year. So the defense at its best can hold very good teams to well below their season average, and that is encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely. And the shots, like, I think one of the things to point out, we'll talk about it a little more, but that UCLA game was the worst case of it. In some instances, especially towards, I don't know, 8-9 minutes gone, right, where Marquette was starting to get a little panicky and desperate, for the most part, Marquette wasn't taking bad shots in the UCLA game. In fact, they had open jumpers, right? Kolick missed, what, three open threes, I think statistically we saw, and Lewis missed a couple. You know, Lewis going 0-7. I don't know that we would ever – he went 0-7 against UCLA. I don't know that we ever want him taking more than four. I don't care if they're going in. Like, that is not Justin's game, is volume three-point shooting. So, but having said that, I think the offense mechanically is working. Just against UCLA, for whatever reason, with the exception of Greg Elliott, nobody could hit anything.
Right.
You know,
that's the concerning thing is Marquette still does not have a great offense, and it's not going to become a great offense at any point this season. They kind of just are what they are at this point. And when this team goes into droughts offensively, you know, they go 3, 4, 5 possessions in a row without a bucket, and the other team is able to build the lead slowly. You know, a 4-point lead turns into a 7-point lead, and that turns into an 11-point lead, and then you feel you got to shoot threes to catch up, and then you can't hit them. Then, you know, 11 turns into 20 really quickly.
Right.
So that's going to be a concern against, I would say, more than half of the teams in the Big East, that if Marquette starts cold and stays cold, they could be down 20 to, like I said, about half the teams in the Big East pretty quickly. And we saw that against UCLA, is when you're just ice cold and nothing is falling, and that there's like not a way out is the concern. There's like, well, at least we have this guy who can get a bucket, or at least we can rely on this to get offense. I'm not sure we have this or have that. That can be like the slump buster type of guy or slump buster kind of strategy in this offense. We just don't have that.
Yeah, I agree. There is not a go-to scorer, right? Like, I even was wondering during the Kansas State game, right, especially as they got into crunch time. Now, Cam Jones had that clutch three, and it was one of those you just knew he was going to pull up and take it. Like, that was – it was full Cam Leroy Jenkins Jones. And you love it, right? But especially since it went in. But that's the question that's unanswered for me, and I don't know that we discovered anything in the two games this week, is who is, if we need it, who is a go-to scorer, right? Like, Lewis, if he's on, he can be a scorer. Daryl Morcell has shown that he can produce consistently in some games, not all games. Right, Cam Jones can get buckets, but nothing where you're like, yep, that's the guy we want to go with all the time. Oso and Kerr can get buckets off of distribution, but neither one of them are someone, hey, let's post it up, make this, you know, have him go to work on his man and get buckets. There is not a reliable scorer, which, you know, in some instances, maybe that makes us more dangerous because we have more flexibility and people aren't sure who is going to be the go-to scorer or who's going to get the ball in crunch time. But it sure makes me less comfortable, watching these games, that we don't have someone like, hey, let's get Cam Jones the ball and watch him cook. Like, it worked this one time against Kansas State. There's no saying it works again.
Yeah. By the way, shout out to that shot from Cam Jones. That hit the take my money goal for the Kansas State game on the money. The goal for the Kansas State game was for Marquette to be at 50% effective field goal percentage for the game. That game got it to 50% exactly. So,
brilliant.
Two take my money hits this week, so that was good. But back to your point, Phil. Yeah, I agree. And it's probably going to be a situation of the hot hand sometimes. I feel like Daryl Morcell is the guy I want with the ball in his hands as far as decision making. I think he more often than not in those situations would take a good shot or at least make a good decision to give the ball to someone else. So I trust Daryl Morcel the most among the guys you got to trust. But I would also say the ball in Justin Lewis's hands in those situations is probably going to be a good thing more often than not. But again, is he 100% bucket getter? No, not necessarily. But if the ball's got to be in somebody's hands late in the game, I would think Lewis and Morcel are going to be your guys. But a lot of guys have potential to hit a shot, but you know, how much can you rely on potential when the game's on the line? And with the way the season is going, every game could be so critical as far as on the bubble, off the bubble, good side, bad side of the bubble, things like that. So,
right.
It will be certainly something to follow. And I think that kind of transitions me, Phil, to kind of what the kind of midweek topic I wanted to get into in this week's pod, since we have no midweek game, before we talk about the Xavier game on Saturday, maybe just as we assess where this team is in the non-conference play. After non-conference play, looking ahead to Big East play, we've seen enough of this team to maybe answer some questions that we had about them in the preseason, maybe learn some things that we did not know, didn't expect. Where would you like to begin? What's something maybe you have learned, whether it's positive or negative, about this Marquette squad after non-conference play?
I learned that my favorite player on this entire roster is Oso Iguodaro. I have the largest man crush. I am driving his wagon. I'm currently his bandwagon, currently trying to build extra seats so people can join me. He has been, I think, of the players on the roster, the biggest revelation for me.
He's been great. I have touched on it earlier. His development is just so encouraging, and I think he's just scratching the surface of what he can be as a basketball player. And I don't know how many years he'll be in college, but if he does have three more years after this, I think he could be a great college player. What are his pro prospects? I don't know. But if he continues to progress the way he has since last year, you can see the confidence growing, both the confidence he has in himself and the confidence Shaka has in him. Again, he had him at the end of the game against Kansas State where he had to make a play defensively to win that game. And you know, he's not necessarily a go-to scorer yet, but his offensive rating is very good when he does get the ball. It's similar to a Matt Helt situation we had a few years ago where he didn't score much, but when he did, he got it done.
Right.
You know, there was a time there Matt Helt had the number one offensive rating in the country. I think that was his junior or senior year, but you know, Oso's offensive rating is 130.8, according to KenPom. That's top 60 in the country. Kerr's is also very good. It's 110 in the country, as we're recording this on Monday night. But, yeah, Oso has been great, and he's no longer just a spot player, a guy who gets spot minutes. He is a rotation guy, bordering on starter's minutes. I mean, on any given night, he could have more minutes than Kerr. You got 40 minutes and 10 fouls to work with between those two guys, and then you're going to be kind of interchangeable depending on foul situations, fatigue, whatever it is. But Oso has been great, and we went from being concerned maybe only having one guy in the middle to having two guys who were very confident in, who at any given moment can make a play either offensively or defensively. So agree with you on that. Love what I see from Oso. Maybe something I have seen that maybe I've learned a little about this team. I was concerned about, you know, guard play in general, Phil, coming in, specifically maybe ball handlers. Now, while the scoring has not been there, the ball handling is really not a concern for me anymore. Now, granted, this maybe like the turnovers aren't like sterling, you know, like best in the country as far as turnover rate. But I think that we have enough guys who can handle the ball between Morcel and Kolick, and you know, Ellis has been good in his minutes, and Cam has been better than I thought. So I think there's enough depth at the guard spot that Marquette can do mostly what it wants to do. Granted, the shooting is not there, but I think the guards are a little better as far as being Big East ready than I thought maybe they would be.
Yeah, I think for the most part, you're right. I think their turnover rates are probably a little bit high, but like certainly serviceable. And it is, you know, yeah, if we fix turnovers, maybe we play even better. But like, it's not the worst thing we have going against us. So yeah, I'm comfortable with the hey, the guards aren't as likely to turn it over. I am surprised, and this will maybe pivot to another conversation, but I'm surprised at how well and how much Tyler Kolek is essentially playing the point guard position. I did not really see that coming, so that's a pleasant surprise that Kolek can kind of be that lead point guard, especially as Stevie Mitchell is still young. Ellis has been playing the point in his limited minutes, but I think he's still very young and has a lot of room to improve. So having Kolek able to bring the ball up, initiate the offense, right? That's been a nice surprise for this team, I think.
Yeah. Kind of springboarding off that point, though, is I guess something that we've learned, but like we kind of were concerned about ahead of the season, that's essentially been confirmed, is that this team can't shoot.
Nope.
And that's going to be a concern that's probably not going to be fixed this season. I mean, their three-point percentage is 31.5. That's ranks 242 in the country out of 350-something teams. So, yeah, this team doesn't have shooters. And I think they take a lot of threes considering what their overall skill set is as far as shooting threes. I think they take a little too many. I would hope maybe that will change. You know, it's easy for us to sit here and say we'll get more layups. I mean, that's a lot easier said than done, getting into the paint. But the number of three-point attempts for a team that shoots below 32% as a squad is a little concerning. And, yeah, that was a concern coming in, and that has essentially come to be true, is that this team is struggling, and some more than others.
Yeah, I mean, nearly 50% of our shots are coming from three, and for a team that does not shoot, you know, that shoots at a, we'll say, below average rate from three, that's not what you want, right? You don't want to maximize the thing that you're the least best at.
Yeah.
So that's problematic. Now, what's
yeah,
tough?
46, yeah. Just to jump in real quick, 46% of their shots come are 46% of their field goal attempts are 3-point attempts. That ranks 36th in the country as far as 3-point attempt rate. So they shoot a lot.
Yes, and you know, I think some of it we don't yet know the final story. One of the things I'd kind of point out is, you know, especially with the UCLA game, that game came after Marquette had played five games in, you know, essentially 14 days, right? So, I don't know. Maybe they had tired legs. Maybe, you know, they had been Kansas State on the road. Wisconsin was on the road. It's a 90, you know, it's not that big of a road trip, right? But you still got to go through the habits, and you're playing in a foreign gym and that sort of thing. So, I mean, that's a lot of mileage quick. So hopefully this week off between, you know, while they're doing finals and between the UCLA game and the Xavier game, hopefully that gets them a chance to refresh their legs, kind of refocus. But yeah, the 3-point shooting has not been good. I think we talked about, like, Justin Lewis. Should he take threes? Yeah, absolutely. But I think he should be a little more discerning in his three attempts, right? Like, really make sure it's a good three in the flow. But there's other players like, say, Tyler Kolek. I mean, last year he shot nearly 40% from three. So it's, unless he's suddenly, you know, has fallen down and like shattered his entire shooting form, you know, there's nothing that says he shouldn't be able to shoot threes. But his three-point shooting percentage is, quite frankly, pretty abysmal of late. Shooting less than 25% in the last 3 weeks. You know, that's not good.
20% for the season. You know, and I'm trying to be kind to the kid here, but the numbers are what they are.
Right.
I hesitate to use the term yips, but man, I mean, some of his misses against UCLA, I mean, it's not like they, you know, around and out, or you know, rimmed out on him. I mean, we're talking side of the rim off the backboard type stuff.
Right. Side of the backboard. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, just, It's got to be mental right now. And again, I'm trying not to be hard on the guy because I love everything else about his game. He plays hard. He's got some swagger out there. He talks some shit and backs it up. He gives you everything he's got defensively. You love all that. And, you know, that's why even Shock, I think, was asked about it after the last game and said there's no thought about taking him out of the lineup. Because, yeah, he gives you just about everything you want. Aside from three-point shooting, because I think he's unselfish with the ball. He makes good decisions as far as driving and dishing and setting up teammates. But, man, his three-point shot is just broken as hell. And I don't know what he needs to do, but I think it is mental. Maybe he has to shake up his routine a little bit. I don't know, maybe wear some do something goofy that maybe might not make sense. Like, I don't know, wear an arm sleeve or wear different socks or walk to practice a different route than you normally would. Just something to shake up your routine and just maybe shake you mentally a little bit because it's in his head right now. And it's like when you missed as many in a row as he has, maybe you start aiming too much and then your form is off and you're making it even worse. I guess I'm saying think less but I don't know if this is something that gets fixed, Phil, by just going into the gym and getting up 200 shots a day. It's like in the game mentally something's broken and it's just not clicking for him. And you just there's no way to fix it. There's no Tyler, if you did this, it'll fix it. Oh, okay. Well, let's just do that. No, it's not that simple. But his 3-point shooting is alarming. But unfortunately, the only way to fix it is to let him shoot and hopefully it's. Starts going in, but
right.
But at the same time, if he's 20% and if he stays at 20%, at some point you got to say, Tyler, you just got to stop shooting, man. So I don't know what the answer is. Do you have an answer for him?
I think he needs to go full tin cup in day one of the U.S. Open, and he needs to pull his pockets inside out, turn his visor upside down and sideways and put a T in his left sock or some, during the game and just shake it up. Cause I think again, you and I have played at no levels of basketball other than, rec league or, junior high, early high school basketball. Right. So it's not like we're some sort of like experts on the psychology of the college basketball game. But I think you're right that it is mental within the game, right? Like just mechanically, he looks like it looks painful, right? Like his shot just looks it looks different every time he shoots it. And two, it just looks forced. So I don't know, I guess if I was, because again, I think he's fully capable. I think this is a mental block. Honestly, if I was Shaka, I think my guidance would be, and Shaka, if you're listening, you're welcome. Just like, don't even mention it this week. Don't even bring up the 3-point shooting thing when he gets into the game against Xavier. Like just whatever, if the shot's open, take the shot. Like I think the first couple of weeks, you just got to let him try and shoot his way out of it. And if he does, great. And if he doesn't, if this is another 2 weeks of he's shooting 20%, well, guess what? He's a 20% 3-point shooter. We should probably take that out of the playbook.
Right. Yeah. Like, if Shaka, you are listening, I am so sorry.
I'd like to apologize. If we owe you anything for your time, let us know.
Shaka hopefully has much better things to do than listen to this podcast. But, yeah, Alex, I don't know what the answer is, but I do think it's mental with him. And like I said, he shot 35.9%. last year at George Mason. And, the 3-point distance is the same this year as it was last year, right? It didn't move back on him.
Right.
What is George? They're Atlantic 10 now?
Yeah.
Whatever league they're, yeah. The Atlantic 10 3-point line is the same as the Big East 3-point line. Exact same. So, it's got to come around. I don't expect Tyler to get all the way up to 35% this year just because he's dug himself in quite a hole. But, if, from this point on, maybe he could shoot 35% or at least 33% from this point on. That would be a step forward. But again, he's not the only guy struggling from three this year. His is just the most jarring because he shot the most. Actually, has he shot? No, the only person who shot more than him is Lewis. As far as attempts, Lewis has tried 54, Kolick 50, Morsell 47. And nobody else has taken more. Oh, wait, Cam Jones has taken 53. Of course he's taken more. So, 54 for Lewis, 53 for Cam, 50 for Kolick. Those are the only guys who have attempted 50, and then Morsell has attempted 47.
But yeah, the thing that sticks out about that is, and it's kind of harping on it, but like Justin Lewis, I don't think in this offense should be taking 54 threes to date, right? Like
27.8%.
Right, like if he was in the 40 range, like 40, 42, 43, I'd feel a lot more comfortable. Now, it's not helped by the fact that he took 7 against UCLA. So he's chucking there a little bit. But yeah, that 3-point rate for Justin is a little too high. I'm not mad that he's taking threes, but like it's too much of his offense right now.
Yeah, if you're 27%, you shouldn't be leading your team in 3-point attempts.
Correct. Correct. Again, don't maximize the thing you're least good at.
Right. Right. So, you know, and you're looking at the percentages. There aren't very many that are stellar. The best percentages on the team, you know, Greg Elliott has taken 21 now, and he's at 52%. So as that number grows, you know, so Greg Elliott should be shooting more threes because, you know, he shot 45% last year?
Yep.
So, he should have a green light from three. I think he's starting to get his confidence. Morcell, after a hot start, he's cooled off a little bit, but he's still at 38% for the year. You still want him shooting threes. Kolek, he's got to come around a little bit. You don't want him to completely take it out of his game yet, but the thing is, you don't also want to say, I almost say you want to tell him approach with caution, but you don't want to tell him that either because that's not helping the problem.
Well, that's actually maybe part of the problem, right? Because he's thinking.
Yeah, that
too
might
much.
Be part of the problem. Yeah, Cam, maybe a little low. He's attempted 53. He's shooting 32%. So the percentage is a tad lower than you would like it, but Cam's a guy who's probably going to have the, you know, he's going to shoot more often than not, so that's fine. Beyond that, you know, David Joplin's 33%. That's not bad for a guy his size. He's 11-33 on the year. You'd like to see him still shooting it a little bit. Stevie Mitchell, the rest of the guys, it's pretty small sample size. Stevie Mitchell's 3 out of 10. Amarion Ellis is 3 out of 5. Omax is 4 out of 19. That's 21%. So those are your rest of your numbers for the year. So overall, not a great 3-point shooting team. We kind of knew that coming in. And again, I don't know if you're going to fix that in season. Like I said, it's not like you get everybody in the gym and do 500 shots a game and that fixes it. They are what they are. Or 500 shots a practice, a shots a day. They are what they are. You're not going to dramatically improve your 3-point shooting team. So I guess get to the larger point is what I want to learn or see about this team. Just that 3-point attempt rate is just a bit high for me. I know it's easy to sit here and say you want more layups, and because if getting layups were easy, you'd do it every play. But fewer threes would probably be a good thing until some of these percentages come up.
Yeah, well, and that kind of ties into another point I want to make is, you know, and it's been something rattling around in my brain, and I think it kind of broke loose once I heard Shaka Smart mention it on his Thursday radio show, which, by the way, you don't have to listen to it live on the radio. You can download it from the Marquette Basketball links on Spotify, you know, iTunes, etc. I'll admit I tuned out the last couple of years in the Wojo era. It is do not miss, at least so far it has been do not miss listening, right? Like you get some really good insight in terms of what Shaq is thinking, what's going on with the team. You know, we learned that Oso Iguodaro's nickname is .0 because he's kind of like a point guard out there. But the point I wanted to make is Shaka brought up on the radio this past Thursday that, you know, sometimes he sees the team trying to get the perfect shot and they will pass up a good shot in the hopes that they get a better shot later in the shot clock. And I think the thing I've been noticing, and maybe it's, you know, maybe it's reflected by the 3-point shots because we're jacking them up late in the shot clock. But I think this team needs to be willing to take the first good shot it sees, right? And sometimes that shot is a shot at the rim. Yes, we know that you've got a kick to a corner three that have been generated. Sometimes you don't have to make that pass and just get the layup, right? I know from an effective field goal percentage, you say, hey, I want to take, you know, if I'm shooting 35% from three corner threes, I want to take that more often than I take the 70% make on the 2-point shot, right? Like there, it works out that those are, you know, not quite equivalent, but they're close, right? But I think they need to be, I don't know if it's more selfish or less in a hurry to make the extra pass, but whatever it is, you know, I think they need to, when they get good shots, I think they need to take them and not wait for a better shot, right? There was a, you know, like you said, Greg Elliott in the UCLA game went 6 from 9 for 3, and there was at least 2 other threes that he should have taken, and he didn't, and he passed it on, right? They just need to take a good shot.
If you got a good shot, take it.
Right.
I have no argument for me there, especially if it's layups. You know, but I do see what you're saying, and yeah, I guess I hadn't heard that for Shaka. I missed the show this week, but yeah, if there's a good shot at the rim, put it down, get the 2 points, live another day, get back on defense, set up that press, see if you can get the other team off out of their rhythm with your defense. Because, you know, when your offense is rolling, it sets up your defense for success. It's when you're bricking things off the back iron and the other team can start running, it doesn't give your defense a chance to set up. And that just leads to things that can spiral out of control. So,
right. And we're not talking about the need for extraordinary offense. We're just talking, with the defense we have, the need for competent offense.
Exactly. Exactly. Just got to improve somewhere. Especially if you're gonna get enough wins in Big East play to make the tournament. And Marquette has put itself in a position where, if they can get maybe 10 wins in the Big East, I think they're gonna be right there. I don't know if they'll get in for sure, but they'll be in the discussion.
Yeah, I mean,
gotta be some good teams to do that though.
18-13, especially with the strength of schedule, that'll be, you know, upper 70s in the NCAA. That puts you in the discussion, and that's all we really want out of this team, right? I mean, you and I, like we talked about at the beginning of the pod, you and I were really saying, hey, let's get to 500 or so. 500 is probably now the floor, right? Like, if we don't get to 500, well, something's gone terribly wrong. We should be able to get past 500, and it's just a question of how much past 500 that gets us into a, you know, at a minimum, team bubble watch.
Yeah. Yep. The return of team bubble watch. It may be coming back, but yeah, I mean, it never works out. Oh, I'm all in. It'd be a nice change, but you know, it never works out to be this simple, but just kind of looking at it this way, if you can sweep DePaul, Georgetown, and either Butler or Creighton, that you get those three sweeps, and acknowledge you're probably going to get swept by Villanova, Connecticut, Xavier, then just get a split with everybody else, home and road. You know, that's 500. That's your 10 wins.
Right.
And I think that's achievable. It never works out that way. You know, maybe you upset Xavier and you lose to DePaul and bounces out some other way, but That's kind of the simplest way I try to look at this Big East slate. There are teams that I think Marquette can sweep. There are teams that I think Marquette may be swept by. Big East got like 4 teams ranked right now.
Yeah.
There are going to be some challenges. Maybe you surprise some teams when you are at home. Maybe when you get a team like Xavier or Seton Hall or Connecticut at home, maybe you can trip them up and maybe get on the plus side of 500. But again, we always have those turds on the road. You go on the road, you know, you lose to DePaul, you lose to Georgetown, something like that. Lose at Creighton, but we'll see where they go. So anything else we want to touch on as far as things we've learned, things we've observed, things we think we know about this team through 11 games?
No, I think that feels like enough. Summarizing, it's a good to very good defense with a below average to every once in a while average offense. And it's the right mix that you want. You want more, you want everything to be better. But, you know, I like the style and the approach of the team, and you can see where it's going and the identity. So, yeah, I think we've learned quite a lot these last 11 games.
So on Saturday, December the 18th, Marquette will begin Big East play. They will be taking on Xavier. This will be a road game, so this will be in Cincinnati. Phil, the good news is it does not appear – well, not just doesn't appear. Marquette definitely will not go 0 for December. So that was a fear we had a couple weeks ago. So thanks to Kansas State, that is now off the table. So now let's see if we can get 2 wins of December, maybe 3 wins. And it will start with Xavier. And again, that game Saturday the 18th, that'll be 3 p.m. Central. You can see it on Fox Sports 1 as long as there are no travel delays with anybody. Boy, that sucked having that.
Oh, God. Yes. I had an extremely disappointed 6-year-old who was nearly apoplectic that he did not get to go. But, yes, I was not going to set a bear trap for myself by keeping a 6-year-old up till 11:30 and then having to spend all day with him the next day.
Did you get to go to the game at all?
Yes, I did. Yes. So the wife character took one for the team because apparently kids need to be watched even when they're asleep. Yeah. You can't just abandon them. So myself and the next door neighbor went to the game. And I got to say one thing I'll say about, even though that UCLA game felt wildly out of hand at times, the crowd was still largely in it. Like the crowd is just the general sense between what's on Twitter, talking to the common folks, and the crowd I've experienced at games, they are ready to, like, die for this team right now, right? Like, they are ready to love and embrace this team. So if they can put together some good efforts in home games, they will find a crowd there that's ready to support them. So that's a positive. I think part of that is, you know, hey, we haven't had a great product for a couple of years, plus, you know, people are starting to try and emerge from COVID and feel normal and positive again. So I think there's a crowd atmosphere to really be found in the Five Serve this year, I think.
Well, I'm glad you were able to get to the arena and experience it, unlike the Fox broadcasting team.
Well,
but Xavier is with a top 25 team on KenPom.
I knew that's where you were going.
I had to. But so again, Xavier, one of the top teams in the Big East. They're 9-1 on the season. Their lone loss is to a very good, surprisingly good Iowa State team, coming off a big win over their in-town rival Cincinnati on this past Saturday. They actually have a game before they take on Marquette. They play Morehead State on Wednesday. But KenPom has this as a 10-point spread, so not giving Marquette much of a chance in this one, Phil. And looking at the metrics, you can understand why Xavier has a top, almost top 25 defense, or top 25 offense and defense. Technically, it's just outside of that. 26th ranked offense in the country on KenPom, 33 ranked defense. I know this is a year, I know, just hearing from Xavier fans before the season, Phil, that a little heat on Travis Steele maybe to have a breakthrough season after, you know, missing some tournaments and really kind of falling back after Chris Mack left. So far, he seems to be delivering, but he's got to win Big East games to really quiet some of his critics. So far, so good for him. And they'll be a big favorite on Saturday. What do you think is going to be a key for the Golden Eagles if they're going to go to Cincinnati and pull off an upset?
Well, I think the big thing that stands out to me is Xavier turns the ball over kind of a lot. Right, and especially their starting point guard Dwan Odom. I'm going to go with, his turnover rate is almost 33%, for which for a point guard is like real bad, right? So, you know, with Marquette's defensive style and Xavier's primary weakness of turnovers, I think that plays well into Marquette's hands. Now, it's a question whether Marquette can score the ball when they get a turnover, but I think you'll see Marquette able to turn over Xavier quite a lot, and that could be interesting to see how Xavier reacts to that.
That's a good call. Yeah, looking at the KenPom numbers, their turnover rate is alarming. It's ranks 262nd in the country, so that is way up there. That's basically their turnover rate is worse nationally compared to the other teams than Marquette's 3-point percentage is compared to other teams.
Right. So as bad as we are at 3-point shooting, they're worse at turnovers.
So yeah, and you know, Marquette, they can turn you over a little bit, especially if the key thing though, Phil, is Marquette's got to get their offense going at least a little bit, because otherwise you're never going to be able to set up that press or able to get your defense set if you're, you know, throwing up bricks all game and then Xavier's able to run.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So just looking at some other numbers for Xavier, their effective field goal percentage on defense is outstanding, 12th in the country. So there aren't going to be very many easy buckets in this game. Offensive numbers are good. They're a better three-point shooting team than Marquette, but not outstanding. 34% on the season. Paul Scruggs is back this season. He was a preseason All Big East pick by I think most everybody. So, you know, he's obviously going to be a problem in this game. Probably another situation where is that Morcell's guy or is he match up somewhere else?
I would guess it's Morcell's guy. I don't know who else you would match up on there. Maybe you play a little Cam Jones there, or I really think it's going to be a Morcell assignment, and you just whatever you get out of Morcell offensively is great, but you really got to hope he can at least contain Scruggs a little bit. I think the other matchup that's going to be interesting is Zach Fremantle.
It looks like he just came back. Yeah, he missed like the first like 6-7 games of the season. He's another guy who was on preseason All Big East team. I think he was on second team. But yeah, he's just come back, and his minutes have steadily been increasing.
Right. So I'm curious to see what Marquette does against the combination of Zach Fremantle and Jack Nunge, right, with Kirkwath and Oso Igodaro, right. I think in the post there's some good defense to be had there. So I think Xavier's strengths tend to go against Marquette's strengths, with the big difference being, Xavier's weakness, primary weakness being turnovers, which is something Marquette is good at and should be stylistically really good at against a Xavier. So if it sounds like I'm tipping my hand about which way I'm going on this, you're probably right. But I think the Scruggs matchup will be very interesting, as will the bigs down low. Because if you can't slow Scruggs down, I don't know that Marquette can score enough points to keep up with Xavier.
So I sounds like you're leaning towards a W a little bit there, Phil.
I 100% am. I'm actually wildly confident that Marquette can win this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think Xavier is kind of, the vibe I get from the fans and just kind of how their schedule has shaken out and the teams they've played, et cetera. I think Xavier is due for a regression, and I think Marquette's going to get a week's worth of rest, come in refocused, and I think they can steal a W here.
I'm just looking at some of Xavier's best wins. Their best wins, definitely, they beat Ohio State earlier this season. That was their third game of the year. They've had their share of bye games. They beat Virginia Tech on a neutral floor, beat Oklahoma State in Stillwater. That's a pretty nice win. And then I mentioned they just blew out Cincinnati at home last Saturday. But I'm not quite as optimistic as you are, because I'm just a little concerned that Marquette's offense doesn't get going enough to allow their defense to have the impact on Xavier that is going to be needed to win this game. I do like your thought about the turnovers, though, and that if Xavier does turn the ball over quite a bit. And if Marquette could play off that and get Xavier out of rhythm and really frustrate their backcourt, yeah, maybe this game is closer. I think I'd certainly take Marquette plus 10. Now, that's the KenPom line. I don't know what the Vegas line is going to be. But, yeah, I'd take Marquette plus 10 points in this game, but I'm hesitant to predict a win in this one.
Well, that's fair. I mean, that's probably the smart play. I'm getting a little optimistic. Phil is getting a little overconfident and a little outside of his lane. But I feel pretty good about this game. Now, it could be a complete blowout, but I think it's going to be good.
So if we're talking take my money for this game, Phil, the turnover thing jumps out. Is that maybe a key point to focus on? Because that's kind of where I'm leaning.
I absolutely would. I mean, I think that's going to be the difference, right? If Marquette can't turn over Xavier at a precipitous rate, right? I think the offense, unless we suddenly start shooting better than we have of late, right? We could always, if we shoot at 10 points higher than we have in the past, yeah, I think we'll be fine. But I think the more realistic event is that we turn over Xavier a lot and just generate more possessions for us to score on. I think that's going to be the key, that we're going to have to outscore them just by score, you know, generating more possessions, which results in more baskets made, but at probably the same inefficiency rate. So, yeah, I think turnovers is the right call there. The question is, what is the number?
So Marquette's defense is turning over opponents at a rate of 19.9%. Xavier's turnover rate for the season is at 20.8. So I think it's got to be at least 20 if I'm going to set a mark for that. Should I set it to make Xavier worse than their season average and go up to 21? Or do you think 20 would be good enough? Because there hadn't been many games, at least against power conference teams, when Marquette has had a turnover percentage on defense of better than 20. Looking at, say, just the last few games, for example, it was 15% against UCLA, 15.8 against Kansas State, 14.5 against Wisconsin, a loss, of course, 25.6 against Jackson State, 20.9 against Northern Illinois. Those are bye games. The big one was Illinois. That was 33.8. So I'm thinking 21 might be high. I'm leaning 20% turnover rate for Xavier in this game.
Yeah, I'm just kind of going through and looking at the big games for Xavier and where their turnovers were at. Let's look at this Iowa State game.
They hardly turned it over against Cincinnati at 13.7, but they kicked it around quite a bit against Ball State at 22%, Oklahoma State at 22%, Central Michigan at 21%. They're basically the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games in a row between Norfolk State and Ball State. They had a turnover rate of at least 21%.
Yeah, I'm going to go. It looks like they've been in the range of, 15 to 18 turnovers. I think if we can generate 18 turnovers, I think we can win the game. So then it's a question of, you know, what that percentage is. I would say it'll probably be a high possession game. So 18 turnovers in a high possession game. I guess what I'm trying to do is do the napkin math that gets us to probably at least 20%, right? Like maybe 20.5, something like that, I think is the target to win this game.
I'll make it a nice round 20%. I'll give them a fighting chance. So 20% turnover rate is the take my money wager for this team. By the way, if you're keeping track, if you're playing along, there are the take my money has hit 4 times this year, so we're in for 4 units so far. I think I might actually not cash out, but just pay the non-conference section just to have that on just on the 2021 docket, and then I'll pay the rest just to pay it in installments, I guess. Then I'll pay the rest at the end of the season. So I'll pay my first $40 probably this week. Just have it on
the 2021. The 6 tax attorneys listening to this podcast all approve.
Yeah, I know they would. I know they would. So that's kind of my strategy. But anyway, so if you're keeping track, we owe 4 units so far, whatever a unit is for you. I'm going $10 a challenge. If you're in for anything else, yeah, whatever you want to do. It's fun to play along. So anything else before we get out of here, Phil? We only got one game this week, but, you know, it's time to turn it up a notch as we go into Big East play and, you know, throw out all the cliches you want as far as Big East play, but it is going to be quite a fight in this league this year. Georgetown has looked rough, but you know, we joke about DePaul. For what it's worth, Lunardi has DePaul like one of the last 4 teams out of the tournament right now. Like, even DePaul is like, yeah, they might be a joke, but they're not a joke right now.
Right. Yeah, I think to borrow an old-timey phrase, I think it's time to we've got to gird our loins and get prepared for Big East play here, because it's about to get real serious.
Yeah. Yeah, DePaul, shout out to the win over Louisville, by the way. Speaking of, you know, our old friend Chris Mack, that is a tough L for Chris.
Yeah, he's been racking them up of late.
Ooh, yikes. Poor Chris Mack. We miss him. I do miss him in the Big East, though. He was hilarious. That Cincinnati Xavier rivalry was highly entertaining when it was Mack and Cronin.
Oh, 100%.
They loved to get each other, get under each other's skin. But
oh, by the way, that does bring up, there were a couple of near aneurysms exploding during the UCLA game. So I don't know if they showed Cronin much on the telecast, but every single time there was a timeout or something crazy happened, I immediately looked over to the UCLA bench. And let's just say this, if he was my coach, I'm a pretty peace-loving dude. There is no way I wouldn't punch him in the face. Like, just that guy just is crazy.
Yeah, he is. I do love seeing him mad, but I will say I respect the man because he's still rocking the suit on the sideline.
That's fair. That's fair.
I do respect the suit game. But all right, I guess that's about it for this week's show. We appreciate you tuning in. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. We have a Crack Sidewalks Facebook. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. Go to cracksidewalks.com. Post a podcast there. You can leave comments on cracksidewalks.com if you wish. And remember to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Phil, anything you're going to do to pass the time between now and Saturday?
I work a couple of days and then go on vacation for the rest of the year.
Oh, that's the good stuff.
Drink beers. So beer drinking. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. A beercation.
Yes, there you go.
That's way. All right. Talk to you guys on Saturday. Pod again next weekend. Until next time, seashells and balloons, everybody.